Well, that was terrific, and I think each of our panelists have been great in setting this out. Now, as you're getting your questions ready for the panelists, I want to throw one question out to each of them, and I'm going to ask them to confine their answers to just about 2 minutes each. I want to ask them, and they each are mic'd up so they can answer from their chairs, if you could think of one or two things that the federal government could best do from kind of the OJP standpoint to make a difference in this area, what would be the best federal role? And let me start with Jamie Foxx.
Okay. That's
too
loud?
You're very loud.
Sorry, I'll whisper.
Oh, that's great.
Well, I think I'd go back to doing some of the things we did in the 90s, because we don't need to reinvent wheels. And in terms of evidence-based policy, I'll go back to the after-school programs. Of course, it was the prime time for juvenile crime, the 49% of youth violence occurred in the after-school hours, which eventually ended up in the State of the Union address, that was so powerful because it was based on data. And that whether you were Republican or Democrat, left-wing or right-wing, you had to confront the fact that kids after school weren't going until and working at the farms, that they were on their own, and they weren't doing a very good job of raising themselves. And we had a problem of violence after school and drug abuse and alcohol and teen pregnancy. And so I would just go back and look more closely at what the federal government can do to restore some of those programs and improve them. Because part of the difficulty with the 21st Century Schools Initiative and the eventual evaluation by Mathematica, which basically condemned some of the after-school programs, is you can't do it on a shoestring. Yeah, you can call it an after-school program because it's after school, but you know, prevention, of course, prevention is oftentimes criticized. Prevention can work, but prevention done right does work. And if it's funded correctly, if it's given a long enough window of time to show results, it can make a difference. So that's what I would recommend, going back to dealing with the needs of kids before the point that they are heavily engaged in gang activity.
Okay, Gary, and by the way, we're glad you did not come in a swimsuit.
You're not so sure.
Well, I don't know. That's right. I don't have evidence behind my comment. Yeah. You are correct.
We need science.
He has it underneath, you know.
Yeah.
Like Clark Kent, he's going
too much of that one.
Right. Okay. Right. Yeah. Okay, your answer, please.
Intentional, proactive, coordinated effort focused on the 15 to 25 cities with the highest rate and the highest numbers and drop this problem and put it behind us. Focusing on those that have, on what's going on right now, getting rid of the murders. Because those who are doing it now are driving the social pressure of those who are younger. I think there's a little bit of an inverse thinking about having to reach the younger in order that later they might not do it. The younger are looking at the older. So I'd say drop these rates really fast now, and I think they can be done.
Great. Kim?
I would be an advocate of continued research. It's very helpful to read what so many other people put a lot of time into to help us see the clear picture. Evaluation of that research is also helps us to make the arguments. Of course, continued funding, which helps us implement. And then I would ask the federal government, I know this sounds idealistic, but if, and we're speaking to the choir here, but if they could continue to understand that it really is true that the soft stuff is the hard stuff. This is tricky, sticky stuff that you have to get into with communities, that you have to get into from a prevention point of view, and it's so much more complicated than many other things we see.
Excellent. Well, those are very helpful comments. And let me now ask people with questions to step up to the mics. We have one in each of the aisles. And you seem to be a shy group this morning. So we actually have Chris Rose stepping up to the mic. Oh, my goodness. Chris.
Thank you, all three of you. Is this working?
No. Oh, there it is. Okay, good.
Thank you. Your presentations were all so thoughtful and interesting. And Gary, I've heard you speak before, and I was wondering if perhaps, and I know this will probably happen in the workshop afterwards, but if perhaps you could give an example of how the homicide interrupters actually work, perhaps use a real-life example to explain to the audience here how that happens.
Is there an interrupter in the audience who would like to get right in the middle of a conflict right here, right now?
We can create a conflict just to have that happen.
Fonz, you want to get up and mediate a conflict here between the person at your right and the person at your left?
Here comes an interrupter.
Okay.
Well, here's a mic.
Hello, my name is Alfonso with the Seeds by the Convention.
Give him the mic a little better.
Yeah, can you speak up a little bit and maybe speak closer?
My name is Alfonso Breda. I'm about an interrupter with the Seeds by Chicago, Illinois. Well, how do you stop violence on the front end? You have to be out in the streets, first of all. You have to know your neighborhood. In the process of me doing this, I'm going to get two individuals. And I'm going to see where I can start at.
Do you want to recruit some people? Chips, why don't you go up there? I know Chips will do it.
Yeah, cool this guy down, will you?
And then he says,
all right. Can I talk about Chicago before we leave Chicago? Are we still at Chicago here? Mm-hmm. Can I?
I told them, too.
Oh, they're going to...
Well, people go off like that with me, man. So I
can't do what everybody do.
What do you mean they can't do what everybody do? Look at that here.
That's all right. That's what they're doing right now because of that. Okay. What are you going to do, man? You going to leave that alone? I'm asking you.
I'm leaving alone.
No, but okay.
But don't
that,
hold
it, hold it. Hear me out. How you going to stop from coming around? Who is you? You don't run the city. You don't run Chicago. You don't mind the streets by here. Come on, man, stop it. That's what
I'm trying to be bad.
Not everyone I'm asking. You going
to
stop.
I'm trying to be bad. I'm trying to be bad.
You trying.
Yeah.
You got to stay here waiting on for 90 years. Now, what you going to do?
Okay.
That's your decision. What you going to do? What are you going to do?
Well, that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for something to do, man. I want to be somebody.
You want to be somebody.
Yeah.
Be somebody. Excuse my language. I have to do this. I have to.
There's a language problem going on here.
Damn, I ain't asking you about that. I'm talking about you. Why you starting? I'm like, no, yes, you did. Hold on, let me deal with him first. I'm going to come back. You're not that tough. You know you're not that tough, man. Why are you trying to get the tools out? You is?
No, you know he's not. He's not there.
Man, then I ask you to shut up.
There you go.
Lori, I don't know how much time you wanted to give this, but it...
Oh, I think it's
great. Oh, yeah. I have to add something. I mean, this isn't something that lasts sometimes 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
This might go on for the whole night. It might go on for 3 or 4 days. But these guys have the credibility. That's who we're recruiting. Mm-hmm. And they are trained, and they're experts and professional.
Yeah. I was just glad they didn't have any guns with them.
No, our guys don't.
No, I mean,
these guys, I don't know what they're going
through. Can I say something quick about Chicago?
Yeah, I just want to say, for those of you who may not know, one of these disputants was the former director of the National Institute of Justice, James K. Chip Stewart.
Good job.
Chips.
James. I just want to say something about Chicago, since Chicago has seen so much success in terms of homicide. But last year, there was a tremendous amount of media attention to the fact that the homicide numbers were up again. And this reflects the tremendous myopia that we tend to have about crime statistics. And I'm an expert about myopia since I'm terribly nearsighted. But we tend to look at one year to the next. And the problem with 2008 in Chicago, it was worse than 2007, but it was the second best year they had had in like 10 years. So they had become a victim of their own success. That 2007 was so good, and 2008 was good, but not quite. And unfortunately, the media, the general public, just is so focused on one-year changes that some of the great efforts and the great successes you see in Chicago, in places like Boston, when you have one-year upturn, it's like, what have you done for me lately? And that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I have to follow that. Chicago went up by 50 homicides last year and by 400 shootings. It occurred absolutely perfectly concurrently with the removal of the ceasefire intervention, which began in September of 2007 as a result of the fighting between, many of you know about Illinois, and our governor, our former governor and our speaker. And so the ceasefire intervention was interrupted and the shootings and killings went up the next month, starting the next month and through the whole next 15 months.
Mm-hmm. But Jamie's point is a very good one, and you should have been at the side of the police commissioner. I'm sure he could have used you, as the city council and the mayor were beating him up.
It happens all the time. I get a call from a city, they said the crime's up, and you look closely at the historical data and you find that it's just so far down. You know, it's sort of like a diet. You go on a diet, crash diet, lose lots of weight, and inevitably put a few pounds on. It doesn't mean you're obese. It just means that at a certain point you plateau and there's a little bounce up. The challenge is when you see a bounce up, a bounce back, to make sure it's not a huge bounce back. And unfortunately, we just can't seem to get that. When we look at the stock market, if it goes up one day, it doesn't mean the recession's over. And if it goes down one day, it doesn't mean the depression's here. We have a lot more long-term perspective understanding about stocks. But crime, I don't know, we just this one year to the next, as if long-term history just doesn't matter. And it really does. And so often we find good programs and good people pushed out because of one year where things are bad, and it's only because the previous year was just unbelievably good.
Good point. Sir, can you identify yourself?
Sure. Paul Tibbetts with Burness Communications. Gary, you may have touched on this at the end of the skit with your comments, but I think a lot of us that have been involved at the community ground level have seen different versions of caseworkers, community people. What do you think distinguishes your violence interrupters and community outreach workers from all the other 50 different types that we've seen?
Well, several things. The first is that the focus of the whole program and their work is reducing shootings and killings. It's not about drug stuff. It's not about getting out of gangs. It's not about all kinds of other nonspecific stuff. It is very singular, linear objective. Secondly, there's specialization. I mean, the violence interrupters are all about finding, detecting, and preventing potential events. And the outreach workers, although they help with that, now have specific jobs on changing their thinking so that their thinking actually clicks in the other direction for the long term. And then what the staff have put into place in terms of the systems and structures and processes and safeguards so that the workers that are selected are not just whoever somebody thought of or somebody liked or were doing it before, but are really selected for the most, having the most credibility, the most hunger for making the help, and then all of the training system that this team has put into place is very solid. And so they're not just out there. I mean, these are professionally trained workers.
Thanks.
Any other questions out there? Let me throw one, Gary, to you. When we were talking about kind of interaction with police. How do you work as an example with the police department? I know you and I have had some conversations about that, but it would be helpful if you could share that with the audience here.
Yeah, thank you for asking that. It's tricky, as you know, because we work alongside law enforcement, so that law enforcement does what they do and we do what we do. And so, in other words, they catch people if they cross the line. We make sure people don't cross the line. And so that you get a 1+1=10 effect if both are doing their jobs. But our workers cannot be seen to be too close to police or they lose their credibility, right? So the interrupters and outreach workers are not having contact with law enforcement. However, centrally in the program, myself, other senior staff, and at the community level, there's a lot of coordination of various functions. Law enforcement have to know what our workers do. So when they see us schmoozing with these guys, they're aware that that's their job. That's our job. And so they don't suspect something other than that from occurring. But we're not snitching. But we get asked by law enforcement a lot, can you help prevent this retaliation? This is going on. Can you help cool that down? Can you help cool that down? So those that we've been working with for a while know the benefits of having the intervention there. The one thing I didn't mention is that the work is done by community organizations in most cases, and there's a coordinator and a director, and that person works with the commander at the neighborhood level.
Great. Let me turn over here.
Thank you. My name is Pat Obby, and I'm from the Seattle area. And I've been involved in prevention for over 30 years now. And one of the things that I've been observing, especially since the economic crisis, as city councils, different department heads are trying to deal with budgets, it seems like prevention is getting hacked all over the place. It seems like prevention is being downplayed and looked and seen as a secondary issue. As I hear you all speak, you are bringing it up to the forefront, and it's really the delight to hear, and I appreciate all of your science and that you're bringing to it. What I want to know is, do you have any sort of a response plan, almost like a prevention SWAT team type of plan, that as prevention programs start going under attack, what do you bring up to deal with some of the talk show people who tend to mock some of this work or some of the budget players that are involved in this?
Jamie?
There's a whole list of programs that have worked, you know, from preschool programs, like Perry's preschool program, they got scrapped, all the way up to the after-school program. There's a whole range of them, and they're in all various NIJ documents.
All thrown out during budget crisis. They're disregarded, downplayed.
Exactly. There's several issues. So one is that with prevention is that we constantly see, the public seems to want a 100% success rate. You can have a program that works 98% of the time, and then there's some failure, some kid goes astray despite being in the program, and the program scraps. See, it doesn't work. Then there's also the issue of timing. So in my mind, the most effective programs are the programs that address kids at the early stages, whether it be preschool or elementary school. They really work terrifically. But it takes 5 to 10 years to see the results, at least in terms of crime rates. And unfortunately, for much of our political leadership, waiting 5 or 10 years is just too long. That, you know, someone else is going to get credit because I won't be around. I won't be reelected. I won't be in office by then. But I think as a nation, we have to really be far-sighted and understand that we can invest in kids now and wait years to see the results in terms of crime. In the meantime, there'll be lots of other benefits in terms of the wellness of these children, their educational benefits, their mental health benefits. So I think this country just needs a re-education about prevention. I have this thing called 8 Principles of Prevention that I could email you. It talks about the basic issues that we know about prevention that, unfortunately, the public oftentimes does misunderstand.
Our COOP plan has to do with one word, doesn't even need any paper, it's community. And if you have that basis of communication and you're in touch and you're communicating constantly on your prevention programs and levels, we have a lot of success there. In fact, Baltimore City yesterday had a big outreach initiative, hundreds of parents showing out because they cut some of the recreation centers in the city. And, of course, they're dealing with this homicide issue, so it's similar to what Dr. Fox is saying.
So I want to add just two things. One is that, we have to be separating out the individual outcome programs from community-level outcome programs. So a lot of, in fact, the individual outcome programs have not shown community-level benefit, even 2 years, 5 years, or 15 years later. Second, there, and I know a lot of the people who are involved in this, there is a part of a misinterpretation of prevention to not realize how fast change can happen. Because prevention, in fact, does have more to do with changing the now than everybody realizes. Third, there is a miss, and we've seen this over and over and over again, immunization programs, child mortality programs, TB programs, and now interventions like which can change things within a year and 2 years. And that isn't what is being discussed enough. And then third is there is a confusion in the public mind between what works and what makes people think feel good. And so a lot of what is going on now is stuff that has already been disproven. Or not only unproven, but disproven. But it makes the public feel good because it nurtures anger and these kinds of things. So the separation between what works and makes you feel good, we have not split our brain well enough on this stuff.
I would think from a very practical standpoint, I would find law enforcement allies and talk to the group Fight Crime, Invest in Kids, which is headquartered here in Washington, that Gil Kerlikowske was the president of.
Know the group well.
Good.
Great group.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi. Thank you very much to the panelists.
And can you identify yourself, please?
My name is Maura Fiedler. I'm with the COPS office.
Oh, wonderful. Good.
And I have a few questions for Colonel Ward. As you know, law enforcement struggles with victims filing against the perpetrator in domestic violence. And do you find that your program increases the willingness to file charges and versus the people that answer no to those first three questions and don't go through this potential lethality program?
Yes, the pilot program does show an increase in all types of orders and all types of filings and in some of the actual final decisions from the court.
Okay,
so we're very, very fortunate there. And we can send you all that, too.
Oh, that'd be great. Yep. Thank you. And then the second question I have is how many repeat calls for service do you have to someone, the victim, who answers no on those questions for whatever reason, maybe fear of, you know, backlash from the perpetrator? How many times do those escalate into multiple repeat calls for service, and then do they actually go through the intervention program?
Yes, that's a great question. We do have some where there's still a repeat call for service, and we've tried to take a couple other avenues, including meeting the victims at other locations. Perhaps it's the home environment or some other place that they're uncomfortable, but it continues to be this work between the officer and the advocate who go together to these home visits to empower the victim in that particular case and get to problem-solving the conflict in that home in one way or another. So it is something we're tracking, though, to get to, like in the pilot, those 21 houses we still have on the radar screen.
Thank you.
This is our last question.
My name is Aaron Voldman. I work with the Student Peace Alliance. The Youth Promise Act, legislation aimed at supporting community-based approaches to violence prevention and intervention, has been rapidly picking up co-sponsors in the U.S. House, currently sitting at 155. Mm-hmm. Have you worked on the legislation, or do you have views about the bill?
No, you're asking me or the panel?
Those are speaking, the panelists. You can answer, too, if you'd like.
Let me turn to the panel.
We have not, but I'll find you afterwards and learn more about it.
Cool. I'll let you take it.
Well, the administration is looking at it and talking to the sponsors.
Thank you.
We're going to have to wrap up now. I hope you can join me in thanking our terrific panel.